Welcome back for another deep dive. Today we're looking into a case that a listener requested. It's Cleveland Board of Education v. Loudermill.
Yeah, this one really digs into the whole idea of property rights, but for public employees.
You know, you sent us a ton of documents for this one.
Oh, yeah.
Briefs, opinions, really the whole nine yards. So to set the scene for our listeners, we're dealing with James Loudermill, who was a security guard.
Right.
And he got fired for dishonesty on his job application. Seems pretty open and shut, right? Well, not so fast. See, Ohio law at the time gave him a property interest in his job. Kind of a weird concept.
It is. Most people think of property as like, you know, a house or a car. This case really stretches our understanding of what property can mean.
Exactly. So the big question the Supreme Court had to grapple with was, what does due process look like in this situation? If you can only be fired for cause, what process is actually due to you?
A great question. And you know, one that has big implications for public employees all over.
Absolutely. So let's break down the facts of the case a little. So Loudermill gets fired, right? But he doesn't get any real chance to respond to the charges against him before he's out of a job.
Right.
Ohio law did allow for some administrative review, but that was all after the fact. So after he'd already been fired.
Okay, so let me jump in here. This idea of a property interest in a job, it's not like owning a house. It's created by state law. In this case, that Ohio law gave Loudermill certain job protections. It's like the law was saying, hey, you've got this expectation of continued employment unless there's a really good reason to fire you.
And that's where the 14th Amendment comes into play. The Due Process Clause says the government can't take away your life, liberty, or property without, well, due process of law.
Right. And the court had to decide, what does due process mean in this context?
Like, what is that process that's due to you?
Exactly. Is it enough to have a review after you've already been fired? Or does the Constitution require something more? Something before the termination?
Right? Because, you know, the school board, they argued their post-termination process was enough. They said, hey, he can still appeal. He can get his job back.
Yeah, but Loudermill's side, they argued that being fired without even a chance to respond beforehand, like, that was a violation of his due process rights.
It's interesting because it's not just about whether he ultimately keeps the job. It's about the process itself.
Exactly. Like, he argued that even if he could appeal and win later, there was still real harm done. He lost income immediately and, you know, just that stigma of being fired without a chance to explain himself.
So we've got these two competing interests here.
Yeah.
On one hand, you've got the government. They want efficiency.
Right.
They need to manage their workforce.
They can't be bogged down with hearings for every little thing.
Exactly. But then you have the employee's interest in job security.
Mm-hmm.
And having a fair process, you know, a chance to defend themselves.
Right. That's the balancing act the court had to figure out. What does the Constitution actually require in this situation?
So what they decide? I mean, it's a landmark case, so I'm guessing they went with Loudermill.
You got it. It was a 5-4 decision, but they ruled that the Due Process Clause, it requires some sort of pre-termination hearing for public employees, like Loudermill, those who have that property interest in their job.
So even though Ohio law had that whole post-firing appeals process, it wasn't enough.
Nope, not on its own. The court recognized that being fired can have a huge impact. And basic fairness means you get a chance to respond to accusations before you're actually terminated.
Okay, so pre-termination hearing. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
But what does that even look like? Did they say it has to be a full-blown trial, like with lawyers and evidence and everything?
No, they were pretty practical about it.
Okay.
The court said it doesn't need to be super formal, but there are some key elements that have to be there.
Like what?
Well, first off, the employee has to be told what the charges are against them. They have to get a chance to see the evidence the employer is using. And importantly, they need a chance to tell their side of the story.
To explain their actions, try to defend themselves.
Yeah, the goal is to at least have a chance to clear their name before they're out of a job. It's a kind of compromise.
Right. It tries to balance protecting employees' rights with making sure the government can actually function.
Yep. Makes sense, right?
It does. But it was a split decision, right? 5-4. So what were the dissenting opinions saying?
Yeah, so the justices who dissented, they had a very different view on this whole thing. Justice Rehnquist, he wrote the main dissent. He was saying, this property interest in a job, it's not some abstract right, you know. It's tied to the procedures that the legislature, the lawmakers, put in place when they created that right.
So he's saying the Ohio lawmakers, they got to decide what process was due when they made that law.
Right. He argued the court shouldn't be stepping in and second-guessing the legislature's judgment on that.
That's a classic separation of powers argument. The role of the courts versus the legislature.
Absolutely. And Loudermill is such a good example of how these big constitutional questions play out in, you know, everyday life. We're talking about people's jobs, their ability to support their families.
It's a big deal.
It is.
And we haven't even gotten to the concurring opinions yet or talked about how this case has shaped employment law all across the country. We've got a lot more ground to cover.
We do. We're just getting started. So, you know, we've been talking about this property interest idea and how it plays into Loudermill. And it's worth pointing out, this case, it doesn't apply to every public employee, right?
Right. It's specifically about those who have that property interest in their job, the ones who can only be fired for cause. Mm-hmm. So if someone works for the government, but they could be let go for any reason or no reason at all, they don't have the same protections.
Exactly. Like someone with an at-will employment contract.
Right, right. So Loudermill is really about people like teachers, police officers, firefighters, a lot of civil servants. For them, this case was a game changer.
Huge. Yeah, it created a safeguard against being fired without any chance to respond to the charges against them.
So even if your employer thinks, you know, we've got this guy dead to rights, we're going to fire him, they can't just do it. Just hand you a pink slip and say, get out.
Not anymore. Nope. Not without going through some sort of pre-termination process.
Yeah.
And remember, the court didn't say it has to be this big formal trial.
Yeah, you mentioned that before. They laid out some key elements, but it doesn't have to be a courtroom drama.
Right, just notice of the charges, a chance to see the evidence, and a chance to tell their side of things, to defend themselves.
So at least you get a fighting chance.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe clear your name, or at least explain your actions before they decide to fire you.
Exactly. It's about basic fairness. Preventing someone from making a rash or arbitrary decision to fire you.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. You've been working somewhere for years, and boom, you're fired without a chance to even explain yourself. That could be devastating.
Absolutely. And even if you end up losing your job in the end, having that chance to be heard, you know, it makes a big difference for your ability to move on.
Yeah. Preserves your dignity, helps protect your reputation. At least a little.
Mm-hmm. And it helps ensure that the decision, you know, this is actually made based on the facts, not just on someone's whim or because they had bad information.
Okay, so we've got this minimum standard now, thanks to Loudermill. But how has it actually played out? Did things change smoothly or has there been pushback?
It's been a little bit of both. There's been tons of litigation, you know, lawsuits and court cases as courts all over the country tried to figure out exactly what the court meant in Loudermill. How to apply it in different situations.
Because the guidelines are kind of vague, right? I mean, they said notice and opportunity to respond, but what does that really mean?
That's the problem, yeah. What counts as proper notice? How much time does an employee need to get ready to respond? How much detail do they have to give about the evidence? It's all been debated.
So some employers might try to just do the absolute minimum to follow Loudermill, and some employees might argue they deserve much more protection.
Yeah, and then there's the question of what happens after that pre-termination hearing. Let's say an employee gets their chance to respond, but the employer still fires them. What happens then?
Yeah. What kind of appeals process are they entitled to?
Right. And this takes us back to the post-termination review process in Ohio, the one Loudermill had. The court didn't say that kind of process was unconstitutional.
Right.
But they did say that an unreasonable delay in that process, that could be a problem.
And Justice Brennan, in his concurring opinion, he even said 9 months was a pretty long time.
Yeah, he was concerned about that delay.
So even if you get that initial hearing, you could still be stuck waiting for months, even years, before there's a final decision.
And during that time, you're still out of a job, dealing with all the stress and financial strain that comes with that.
Yeah, it's tough. Sounds like Loudermill was a good step. But we still need to do more to make sure public employees are treated fairly when it comes to being fired.
I agree. It's about balancing efficiency with fairness. Loudermill was a landmark case, no question. It really shaped employment law.
And that brings us to those concurring opinions we talked about earlier.
Oh, yeah. They raise some interesting points, definitely add some nuance to how we think about Loudermill.
So let's talk about those.
Yeah.
What did Justice Marshall and Justice Brennan have to say?
So Justice Marshall, he agreed with the majority, you know, that Loudermill should have gotten a hearing. But he was really worried about how hard it can be for someone to wait for that post-termination review.
Like financially.
Yeah, especially if you're living paycheck to paycheck. Every week without that income, it can be a huge burden.
Makes sense.
He even said that sometimes a more thorough hearing up front might be better. Even if it takes a bit longer, it could help make a more accurate decision right away and avoid all those delays and appeals.
So sometimes spending more time on the initial hearing could actually be more efficient in the long run.
Right. And it could be better for the employee, less hardship for them.
Interesting. Okay, what about Justice Brennan?
So his focus was on the delay. Like, how long can an employer make you wait for a decision after that pre-termination hearing? He wasn't sure 9 months was okay in Loudermill's case, but he didn't say it was definitely unconstitutional either.
So he was basically warning everyone, hey, be careful, delays can be a problem.
Yep. Like, at some point, a delay becomes so long that it's unfair to the employee, no matter what the final decision is.
Makes sense.
And there have been lots of other cases since Loudermill where courts had to figure out what's an unreasonable delay.
Yeah, because Loudermill didn't give any specific timelines.
Right. So courts have had to figure it out on a case-by-case basis.
It sounds like Loudermill really opened up a whole new area of law. Lots of debate and analysis.
Totally. It set a big principle, but it also created a bunch of new questions.
Questions that courts and lawyers are still figuring out.
Yep.
So we've talked a lot about the legal arguments, the different opinions. But to really understand Loudermill, we need to talk about its real-world impact, right?
Yeah. Like, how has it actually changed things for public employers? How do they handle terminations now? What kind of pre-termination processes do they have? What are the lessons from Loudermill about fairness in the workplace?
That's what we're going to look at next. How Loudermill actually plays out in the real world. So we've talked about how Loudermill set this precedent, right? This big legal victory for public employees.
Right.
But a win in court doesn't always mean things change out in the real world.
Yeah.
So how did this ruling actually affect people like you, public employees? Did things change overnight?
Well, not overnight, no. But Loudermill definitely made people pay attention.
Yeah.
Public employers, they couldn't ignore it. They had to start taking those pre-termination procedures seriously. They
right.
couldn't just fire someone without at least going through some kind of process first.
So let's say you're working at a public school or a police department or the sanitation department. What might this new process look like after Loudermill?
Well, it really depends. Every state is different. Every agency might have its own way of doing things. And then, you know, the specific circumstances of the case matter too.
Sure.
Sometimes it might be a pretty informal meeting. Just you and your supervisor, you get to tell your side of the story.
Dog.
Other times it might be more formal, like a hearing with someone neutral there, a third party. They look at the evidence, hear everyone out, and make a recommendation.
So it's not always a big trial, but at least it's a chance to be heard.
Exactly. A chance to defend yourself, you know, try to clear your name before they make a final decision.
And that's what Loudermill was all about,
yeah.
Making sure employees have that voice.
Mm-hmm. It's about making sure things are fair, that decisions aren't made arbitrarily or based on, like, personal grudges or whatever.
But we talked earlier about how the court didn't get super specific about how those pre-termination hearings should work. So I imagine that caused some disagreements.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There have been tons of lawsuits over the years about what exactly counts as adequate notice or a meaningful opportunity to respond. It's tricky.
Yeah.
I mean, what's enough? An employee might say a 5-minute meeting with their boss isn't enough. But the employer might say anything more than that is a huge hassle.
Right. It's about finding that balance.
Exactly. Balancing fairness to the employee with making things run smoothly for the employer.
It sounds like Loudermill gave everyone the basic idea, but a lot of the details still had to be worked out.
Mm-hmm. And that's how it usually goes with these big Supreme Court cases.
Yeah.
They set a principle, but then all the lower courts, they have to interpret it, apply it to different situations.
Like planting a seed?
Yeah.
Loudermill was the seed, and over the years, it's grown into this whole legal forest with different branches and, you know, interpretations.
I like that analogy.
So thinking back on Loudermill, what are the big takeaways? What should public employees know about their rights?
I think the most important thing is to actually know your rights. Loudermill was huge, but the specific protections you have will depend on where you live, what agency you work for, all that.
Right.
So do your research. Find out what your employer's policies are. And if you think your rights have been violated, talk to a lawyer.
Don't just assume everything will work out fairly.
Exactly. You have to be your own advocate.
Well, this has been a really fascinating deep dive into Cleveland Board of Education v. Loudermill. We've covered a lot of ground, from this one security guard's case to talking about the Constitution, the balance of power, and how this decision affects millions of workers.
It's amazing how much one case can change things, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
And it shows how the law is always evolving.
Hmm.
Now, at the end of last part, we asked a question about whistleblowers, remember? Hmm. Public employees who speak out about wrongdoing.
Right, right.
We didn't get to talk about it much, but it's worth thinking about. Could the same ideas from Lauderbell about due process, could they be used to protect whistleblowers?
It's a tough question, because you have to balance protecting people who speak out with making sure the government can still function.
Right. It's complicated.
But it's an important question. Something to keep in mind as we think about fairness and accountability in the workplace.
Absolutely. Well, we've reached the end of our deep dive into Lauderbell. It's been great exploring this case with you. Hopefully everyone listening learned something new.
I hope so. It's been fun.
Until next time, stay curious, and we'll see you on our next deep dive.